Well, hello, my friends, and welcome to church today. My name is David. I'm part of the team here at Westside King's Church, and today is Resurrection Sunday. So maybe this is your first time of tuning into a Westside service. Maybe you'd plan to come along, and then with everything going on, now you're sat at home. But we're glad that you've made that long journey to your sofa or to your kitchen to be with us today. And we want to say welcome to everybody that's watching with us as we journey our way through this Resurrection Sunday. In John chapter 1 and verse 5, it says to us, "The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it." I have a daughter, and she has just turned 8 years old. Her name is Lux, and we called her Lux because Lux quite literally is a Latin word which means light. And so we're drawn to this notion of shining and being bright. I often pray this prayer over her that God would allow her to shine. And she's just turned 8 years old. So we, like many of you at home, are navigating this whole life of what it looks like to be parents and child in our home together and work everything from that sort of place. We're navigating online classes and group video chats with her friends, and she's adapting and adjusting to the way that life is like at this particular moment in history. In fact, just the other day I heard her playing with her toys, and her toys were singing the ABC song as they washed their hands for 20 seconds. So we're all adapting and adjusting. But last weekend was her birthday, and when the isolation sort of request was put in by our provincial government, and we knew that it was going to be this period of stepping away from each other, my wife and I knew that we had this particular conversation coming, that her birthday party was not going to happen. Now, she's a little bit of a planner, so she's been working on what she wanted to happen at this birthday party since November. She's been planning what's going to happen and what our friends are going to do and what the theme is going to be. And so having to sit down with our daughter and tell her, you know, this is not going to happen. You're not going to have any party. And this is difficult for an eight-year-old because immediately this means that, you know, well, that doesn't mean it means I don't get to see my friends. And it also means that my kind of present haul is going to be limited. So it's a big deal for an eight-year-old. Like, we know there are bigger things going on in the world, and there's a lot of stuff happening that's way beyond, you know, a canceled party. But for an eight-year-old, this is a big deal. And so when we sit down and ask her this question, and we talk to her about this thing, and we say to her, you know, it's likely that your party is not going to happen now. And she asks this one question. Her one question that she asked us was, but will we still have a party? Will we still have a party? And isn't that our Easter question this Sunday? At some level, isn't that the question that we're all asking? The biblical scholar and sometime writer for the New York Times, Esau Macaulay, asked this question this week. Dare we speak of joy and resurrection in a world that feels like it's in the shadow of death? Like Lent seemed appropriate. This period of giving up, this period of not having certain things, that seemed like the preparation for the world that we're living in right now. Good Friday, just 2 days ago, felt like the sort of mood and feel that we're currently living in. But Resurrection Sunday? This Sunday where we're supposed to celebrate and be joyful and full of hope because what God has done in Jesus, like, is Resurrection Sunday the sort of day we should talk about it? Should it also be paused? Should it also be delayed? Should we come back later in the year for Easter Sunday? But resurrection stories always have to begin somewhere. Resurrection stories have to start somewhere. All stories start somewhere, right? And resurrection stories are no different. They have to start somewhere. Here's the thing. They invariably have to start in the dark. Resurrection stories invariably start in a dark place, maybe at a graveside or around a tomb or by a coffin. It's probably not a resurrection story if the story doesn't begin with a death. Of course, this is an important thing for us to notice and navigate as readers of the Bible, is that biblical stories invariably begin with death and then move to life. Biblical stories don't begin life to death. Biblical stories are not like Quentin Tarantino films, you know, where you start with this big cast, but by the end it seems like everybody's dead. Biblical stories work the other way around. From darkness comes life. From death comes being. So resurrection stories change the way that the world ordinarily works. See, the Bible knows that it's in the darkest moments, it's in the moments that seem most hopeless, it's in the moments when things are most difficult, that we need God to inspire us, that we need God to reinscribe hope in us, to write the story differently. One of the great biblical moments of hope finds us with the prophet Ezekiel. And the prophet Ezekiel is standing in this valley of dry bones. That's quite literally how the Bible says it. He's in a valley of dry bones. So this is like totally a kid's story. Like this is family friendly. This is the sort of story that you remember that you tell with cutout characters on a felt board. It's set to nice jingly tunes. He's in a valley of dry bones. And this valley of dry bones kind of represents the situation that Ezekiel is in his life at this particular moment. His country is facing a bleak future. Ezekiel's life is in a place of exile. They are essentially shut down from being the people and the place that they want to be. So he's in a valley of dry bones, but his life and his country's life is a valley of dry bones. In the midst of this scene, and the scene is a strange one, I'll admit to you, this scene which feels like, you know, Ezekiel, you've got this prophet and he's in this room of dry bones. It feels like some sort of cross between a horror movie and some sort of excerpt from The Walking Dead or something like that. So we have a biblical prophet and all of these bones. And in the middle of this scene, a question arrives from God. And the question from God, which is our second question that we really want to ask this Easter Sunday. The question that God asks Ezekiel is, can these bones live? And Ezekiel's answer is probably a familiar one to us. Ezekiel, in a valley of dry bones, asked by God, can these bones live? Ezekiel's answer is, God, like, only you know. Which roughly translated means, I'm not sure, God, if I can muster and summon the hope to think that there might be something beyond this. Where I stand right now in this kind of gruesome scene of bones and a dry valley, that probably feels about right. And I'm not sure I can believe or imagine or even think about anything beyond this. So when God asks Ezekiel this question, can these bones live? All that Ezekiel can muster, it seems, is, God, only you know. Of course, as you might guess, that's not the answer. See, the scene in Ezekiel 37 then unfolds to show God rebuilding these bones. He rebuilds these bones back into bodies, and then he breathes breath into them until they become this mass multitude of living people. Can these bones live? The answer? Yes, they can. And that then takes us to another part of the story. In Luke and chapter 24, the story picks up after Jesus' death. And Luke tells us the story like this. But on the first day of the week, at early dawn, they came to the tomb, taking the spices that they had prepared. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb, but when they went in, they did not find the body. While they were perplexed about this, suddenly two men in dazzling clothes stood beside them. The women were terrified and bowed their faces to the ground, but the men said to them, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here, but has risen." Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here, but has risen. And this then is our third question of Easter. Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here, he has risen. Now just stop and think about the awkwardness of that question for a moment. And this awkwardness of this question leads us to, at some level, the awkwardness at the heart of Christianity. That this story that we're telling, this story that we've gathered around to talk about today, this story of Easter, it's not a metaphor. This story isn't some sort of symbolic telling of a piece of myth that will lead us and guide us in how we live our lives. The men say he isn't here. Well, why are you looking for the living amongst the dead? So Easter isn't a story about renewal. It's not a story about revival. It's not even a story about rebirth. It isn't a mythological tale that we as Christians tell to sort of justify the way that we do life. This is a resurrection story. Sarah Condon, I think, says it quite well. She phrases it like this for us. Were it not for the death and resurrection of Jesus, our religion would be a really great story about a kind-hearted rabbi who healed some people. Our religion would encourage care for the widow and the orphan. It might be even known as a religion that taught people how to be nice. But that's not what Christianity is. Christianity is a resurrection religion, and we are a resurrection people. And so what we don't do is we don't mock God by trying to reduce this story to an analogy. We don't drop it down to some metaphor or some piece of tale that just sort of tries to tell us something else. At the roots of what we're talking about in this moment with this question, if Easter isn't a resurrection story, then Christianity has nothing of substance to offer the world. And I mean nothing. Which might feel like a claim that we don't expect to hear on Easter morning. Surely there's value in being a Christian if this story isn't true. Well, yes, but many of those things would just be able to be drawn from other parts of the world. But the Christian story rings its way around this moment that happens in this tomb outside Jerusalem. Why do you look for the living among the dead? The men say, he isn't here, he has risen. And if that's not true, then there's really no point in doing any of this. But as St. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 20, he says, Christ, in fact, was raised from the dead. It is true. And if Christ is raised from the dead, then that means there is hope. If there was an empty tomb, then that means there is hope. Hope in what, we ask ourselves? Well, hope that death does not get the final word in God's good creation. And if death doesn't get the final word in God's creation, then that means that God isn't finished with us yet. It might be that we're surrounded by death. It might be that it feels like there's death everywhere at the moment. And if it's not that we're facing it directly, it definitely feels like it's in the fringes of our society and it's all over our world. But this empty tomb where Jesus isn't, he isn't here, means that death doesn't get the final word in God's story. A brilliant thinker, Tish Harrison Warren, frames it like this for us. The truest fact of the universe this Eastertide is not death tolls or emptied sanctuaries or overcrowded hospitals. The truest fact of the universe is an empty tomb. And the resurrection is the only evidence that love triumphs over death, that weakness prevails over strength, and that beauty outlives ashes. If Jesus is risen in actual history with all the palpability of flesh, fingers, bone, and blood, then there is hope that our mourning will be comforted and that death will not have the final word. See, so we don't need, as God's people, to reduce this story to allegory. We don't need to draw it down to metaphor. We shouldn't do that. Because if we do, we rob ourselves of the truth that we really, really need right now. If we boil this story down and say, well, this is just a story that gives us some encouragement for how we should live, or suggest that when we feel things are a little tough, we can look to this story that tells us that maybe things don't need to be like that. That leaves us empty in a moment when we need something else. But if this story is true, if this story has happened, if the question the men ask the women in Luke's gospel is valid, what are you looking for Jesus here for? Because he is not here, he has risen. Well, then that means that death doesn't get the final word. And right now, at this moment in history, we need that hope. We need that story that tells us that there's more going on here than we can see, and that God is working beyond what we are able to imagine, and that God has always been working like that. We don't know how this story works out for all of us. We don't know how the next months and years are going to go. But Christian hope pushes us beyond that to say, but whatever happens, God will have the final word, and the final word will not be given to death. The great disaster of last Easter, I don't know if you can remember it now, but last Easter, Easter 2019, which right about now feels like it was about 17 years ago, But this time last year, this Easter last year, we were talking about a fire at Notre Dame Cathedral. And this was what was leading the headlines of newspapers all over the world. This is what was bringing the world together. And we were talking about how it was unbelievable to see people coming together to try and look forward to rebuilding this cathedral. That was only a year ago. A year ago, we were worried about this old cathedral. It seems such small fry compared to where we are today. But just 2 days ago, in the ruins of this burnt down cathedral, in the middle of a pandemic, seven people got together and they held a Good Friday service that they streamed out to the world. They wore hazmat suits and stood far apart from each other so as to keep each other safe. And the newspapers and the websites and the news feeds of the world were asking the question, like, why even do this? You're in the ruins of an old building, and we're in the middle of a pandemic. And the priest that led the service said this. He says, we do this in the midst of all of these ruins because there is always a message of hope. And so, our three questions today. Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here. He has risen. And this is true. It's not a story that's made up. It's not a metaphor. It's not an allegory. It's a moment in history that something profound happened, that God raised Jesus from the dead. And he is not here. He has risen. The walls of the tomb couldn't keep him in. Jesus wasn't going to be bound up by just this one small room. And we live that out now in our own lives across the world, where although we find ourselves bound up in small rooms, maybe there's more to us than just that. So the first question, why do you look for the living among the dead? The second question we looked at is, can these bones live? To which the answer from God is a resounding yes, they can. Even in the driest valleys and the most difficult spaces, resurrection can happen. And then our first question. But will we still have a party? The answer to my daughter was, of course, yes. Of course we're going to have a party. And even though it was just the three of us, we partied hard. We ate cake. And we video called with family and friends all over the world. And we played. We had treasure hunts and guessing games all done over video calls. We even snuck out of the house at one stage and left cake on the doorstep of her best friend's house. And then they called each other and ate their cake together. And yes, the fire department even turned up and wished a happy birthday to her from their fire truck. In our small street, they set off their fire sirens and played the happy birthday song, which kind of left to a situation that many of our neighbors then needed resurrection afterwards, such was the volume. You see, because for an 8-year-old child, canceling your birthday party is pretty bad. And there's much bigger things going on in the world. But for all of us, we relate to the problem of the moment we're in right now in terms of how it's affecting and creating us. So why in the midst of all of this do we have a party? Well, because we need to live in a world that's not defined by the grave, that's not defined by the tomb, and that's not defined by death, but a world that's defined by the God who raises the dead. So why does the church still tell the resurrection story on a day like today? Well, we tell the resurrection story because we're still shaped and defined by this God who raised Jesus. Going back to Sarah Condon, who we talked about earlier in this teaching, she helped me out so much this week when she said it like this: the greatest antidote to abject fear is not bravery, it's hopefulness. It's knowing that death doesn't have the final word. And then it is running into the freedom of that promise. And this is what makes Easter worth celebrating, no matter how bizarre it maybe feels to do this and say this just now. So here's my prayer for you this Resurrection Day. May you know that the light has shone in the darkness and the darkness has not overcome it. And may you celebrate this Resurrection Day because death has not and will not have the final word in this God's world. And so perhaps you take this moment right now and you turn to your family member or friend who's in the room with you, or you pick up your phone and you tell or you text someone the great Easter blessing. Alleluia. Christ is risen. Christ is risen indeed. And may the grace and peace of the risen Christ be with you all. Amen.